Welcome to Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast, companion podcast, fan podcast, whatever you want to call it. Thanks so much for joining us for this post-season episode of the Apple TV Plus series. And thanks for listening all season. We had so much fun making this podcast. We wanted to make one more episode. I'm Russell Subiono.
Aloha mai, and I'm Mehana Makainai. Mahalo again for spending the first season of Chief of War with Russell and myself. The new series has everyone talking, especially here at home in Hawaii. Chief of War has been ranked among the most watched shows and proudly held the Apple TV Plus number one spot globally for streaming at the time of its debut in August. While unable to hang on to that coveted ranking for the duration of the season, Chief of War has nonetheless largely maintained its following, competing for the top honor with veteran show Foundation Season 3. Not an easy thing to do, and definitely worthy of accolades. Now that Season 1 has ended, we have a chance to debrief. Russell and I wanted to take this opportunity to discuss a couple of things that are still pressing on our minds, but that, for whatever reason, we were unable to incorporate into our weekly podcasts, and to reflect on our favorite parts of the show, on areas where we believe improvements could be made, and what our hopes are for the future of this series. Russell, let's start with something that you've been wanting to talk about for a while. The opening credits. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think next to seeing well-known historical characters like Kamehameha and Ka'ahumanu and Ke'eaumoku portrayed on the big screen, I was very interested in seeing what they would do for the Chief of War opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, you know, we've seen opening credits kind of evolve and become more stylistic and even change and adjust after each episode. Last year, Entertainment Weekly published their list of the 30 best TV show openings, and in the top 10 were classic shows like The Sopranos, Sex and the City, and of course Game of Thrones, right? And I kind of feel like Game of Thrones, you know, we all point towards Game of Thrones for raising the bar in this current era of television. So when I watched Chief of War episode 1, I was impressed with the opening visual aesthetic. I mean, especially since we named this podcast Feathers and Fire, right? Mm-hmm. Before watching the episode, it was kind of a relief to see.
We got lucky on that one.
Get lucky on that one. It was a relief when I saw tons of feathers and some fire in the opening sequence. So I was like, oh, okay, right on. We chose the right name. But I was even more impressed with the theme song. Hawaiian instruments in the mix, and the fact that the legendary Hans Zimmer composed it. This is huge, right? Hans Zimmer is a two-time Oscar winner, with his first Oscar coming for The Lion King. He scored hundreds of blockbusters and popular films, including the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, the Dark Knight trilogy, and the recent Dune films. He also doesn't score a lot of narrative series. His credits primarily include docuseries. So this is a pretty impressive get for Chief of War. And one day I hope I'll be able to talk to someone about how they were able to snag Hans Zimmer. Overall, I do wish I understood the sequence of the images and the symbols better. But when you think about how the visuals focused on places and items in Hawaii and Hawaiian culture, and you consider the incredible theme music, I'd say it was a pretty solid opening sequence.
I was also impressed with the opening credits. They were dramatic, visually appealing. The yellow feathers blanketed the lo'i and the hale in a very peaceful and beautiful manner that seemed to be enhancing everything they touched. And then you have this transition into the red feathers, having more destructive, a chaotic tone, breaking ships, leading to explosions, swallowing skulls.
Right.
It almost seemed like a foreshadowing of events to come. We've been talking about the incredible featherwork showcased in the series, so the opening is completely aligned with something that's been impressive and captivating from Chief of War. The chanting, like you mentioned, and we've also talked about in earlier podcasts, exquisite. Yeah. And I believe we have Kaumakaiva Kanakaole again and her team to thank for that. It was reminiscent of Game of Thrones, and I miss Game of Thrones, so I was totally into it.
Yeah, same here.
Something that I've been wanting to discuss, Kamehameha and the Naha Stone, which I believe is an incredible story that deserves our attention. This topic was introduced in Episode 5, The Race of the Gods, during a conversation between Kamehameha and Kaahumanu. Here's the history of the Naha Stone. It was said to have been brought to Hilo by the chief Makali'inui Kuakawai'ea during the 12th century from the Wailua River on the island of Kauai to Heiaupinau in Hilo, Hawaii. The stone has an extraordinary story of its own that includes this voyage spanning the entire archipelago. Pretty impressive, right, Russell?
Oh, yeah. Hugely impressive.
The stone was utilized to prove the legitimacy of the Naha clan, a highly esteemed chiefly lineage. Some histories proclaim that infant boys would be placed on the stone. If they cried, they were deemed to be a commoner. But if they remained silent, they were revered as a member of the Naha clan. It was also said that only members of the Naha clan were permitted to and were physically capable of moving this stone, estimated to weigh over 5,000 pounds. Wow. Think you can move it, Russell?
Oh, Garen.
Because Chief of War deals in prophecies, there was a prophecy tied to the stone foretold by Kaleni Wahine, who was a female kahuna or spiritual advisor. The prophecy was that a young chief would overturn the stone, and that man would be granted the power to unify all of Hawaii. The man who ends up fulfilling the prophecy, Kamehameha. According to a translation by Reverend Stephen DeShaw, Kamehameha, through a great triumph, was imbued with the strength of the gods and was able to move the stone. Here's an excerpt from that publication. Then gripped he the stone and leaned over it. As he leaned, great strength came into him and he struggled yet more fiercely, so that the blood burst from his eyes and from the tips of his fingers, and the earth trembled with the might of his struggling, so that they who stood by believed that an earthquake came to his assistance. Kamehameha was about 30 years old when he moved the Naha Stone, and as we know, then goes on to unify all of Hawaii.
I grew up knowing the basics of the significance of the Naha Stone, but I didn't realize when Kamehameha said in the series that it was an earthquake. I didn't realize that that was actually like a historical thing.
Yeah, they brought it in really nicely.
Nana ki kau maha o kanaha. Aho o huliwa. Ya ale na'u ia hana. O hoa o hou ki nei. Ai ki ke hapai. Ua mūno paha la akua.
I didn't realize that the Naha Stone currently resides in front of the Hilo Library. And it's been there since like 1952. I know I've passed it several times in my lifetime. But I thought it was just decoration at the time. And no, I never tried to lift it. But I'm sure there was a period in my childhood where if you told me to try, I probably would have. I don't think so today. I'm too old, too rickety.
Not like pull anything.
Yeah. This part of Kamehameha's prophecy kind of reminds me of the legend of King Arthur and how he became king after being able to pull the sword Excalibur from a stone. I've always thought it was kind of cool that we had our own kind of similar story to tell. When it comes to this series, I think the scene with the Naha Stone is a crucial character development building block in the story. The writers did a great job of creating an opportunity for Kamehameha and Kaahumanu to further reveal themselves to each other and kind of create this bond, which becomes the foundation of their relationship in the future. Also, if anyone wanted to meddle with their future relationship, like, say, Taula, this would have been the moment to nip that bond in the bud, which kind of reminds me, when I was a kid, I used to wish I could jump into movies or TV shows so I could tell characters to make a different choice and save them from any impending downfall or catastrophe. Everybody wished that, right? I mean, Mehana, you wish you could do that, right?
Yeah, of course. Even when I've seen the movie before, I still am like, can we change it?
So if that were a thing, if we were able to do that, this is probably the moment I would have jumped into the series and been like, hey, Kamehameha, be careful. She kind of get eyes for Kayana.
Well, in the conversation held in Chief of War between Kamehameha and Ka'ahumanu, what I really kind of pulled out of it is that you see Kamehameha's vulnerability, an area in which he's unsure of himself. He states that the earth shook, which allowed him to move the Naha Stone. For Hawaiians, a movement of the earth would be seen as support from the gods. So in Chief of War, when Kamehameha says the gods have been silent since then, you understand how important spirituality and a connection to the deities was to our people and rulers. You also see how Kamehameha recognizes that without the aid of the gods, that it will be impossible for him to be victorious in potential and really inevitable battles. While we don't know for certain if our historic Kamehameha had any of these reservations, I did find the incorporation of this topic into the series as meaningful. I discussed it with my cousin Kiahiahi, and she was the one who told me you need to bring up the Naha Stone, because while it was a short part of the series, it provided us with some really important underlying insecurities and questions that Kamehameha is forced to confront, possibly historically and absolutely in Chief of War. Before he goes into the final battle, he makes his offering at the Luakini, and a feather from Kuka'ilimoku floats down and attaches itself to the Ahu'ula of Ka'iana. You remember that sea vessel?
Yeah.
While I would have preferred that that feather landed on Kamehameha, this was still a really incredible and significant scene where even with the red mouth guns at his disposal, only now with the sign of approval from the gods does Kamehameha truly feel secure in going to war. The gods are on his team and he's ready.
I didn't even realize that that's what that represented. I mean, I knew it had to be significant because it kind of came out of nowhere, but I didn't realize what the significance of that feather was. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
As you know, I grew up in the church, so while I've heard stories about Hawaiian deities and their deeds and misdeeds, I was never really in a position to understand how Kanaka believed they interacted with the gods. So Chief of War has been an interesting experience for me on that front, to see and hear how our kupuna lived their spiritual beliefs. And we kind of see the whole spectrum of it, right? From Heke spending time with the forest gods, to Kamehameha talking about how he moved the Naha Stone, to the Kuka'ilimoku succession ceremony, to Kahikili going off the rails with the nightmare fish, and then in the final battle with Pele intervening. And you said something in our last episode that you liked the outcome of Kaiana's confrontation with Keo'ua because the gods proved that they are in control. I hadn't thought about that angle when I first expressed my disappointment with the scene, but the more I think about it, the more I kind of see the symbolism and the more I kind of like it.
Yes, yeah. They are still the ones in control. Good, good. Yeah. I agree, Russell. Let's move into what we really liked about Chief of War. Now, Russell, don't cry, because I know how emotional you can get, and I know you're really upset that season one has come to an end, but can you give me a quick breakdown of your favorite parts of the show or what you believe to be the most notable inclusions?
All right. I will admit, I got emotional with the massacre on the beach and with Nahi's death. And maybe
understandable.
Maybe I cried on the inside when Namake and Kupuohi were cozying up to each other. But I'm definitely not going to cry over the conclusion of season one. I mean, everything comes to an end. I know that's part of life. I like to reflect on the season, right? It was epic, right? That was the word I used, I think, at the beginning of our podcast. It was epic. It created dialogue amongst Hawaiians. It became something that Kanaka could watch as a family, kind of for the most part. I know that I watched it with my wife and kids, and it really fostered a sense of pride in our culture even more so. And I'm grateful for it, and I'm happy with the 9 episodes, and I will be awaiting season 2 with much anticipation. So that's probably my favorite part of the series, how it impacted the people who watched it. I also really enjoyed the portrayal of our wahine. Every major female character had strengths and weaknesses and important roles in the overall narrative. It's hard to tell a story or make a series with so many epic characters, but when you think about it, the entire core cast shone bright and shone often, especially our wahine. And my third favorite thing, the majority of the show was Hawaii Island-centric, right? Oahu gets so much focus in real life, So I love that the Big Island got a lot of the spotlight. I loved seeing shots of Waipio Valley and the lava deserts in Kau, and that we told so much of the history of my home island. I think it goes without saying, Big Island, best island.
Well, I also love Hawaii Island. My ohana, like you know, is also from Waimea. My ohana comes from Kohala area, and I have tutus down from different parts of Hawaii Island. So yes, amazing. But I tend to come from the feeling that no island is the best. They all just have their incredible histories that should be acknowledged. And you better watch out because you live Oahu right now. So you better show her the respect she deserves.
last time I was on Maui, I let it slip out, Big Island, best island. And those people were like, uh-uh.
But it is a really good thing for us to have pride in the islands we come from because it shows still affinity to land and desire to take care of our homes. So important. For me, when I'm looking at things that I liked the best, it was the constant and deliberate use of Olelo Hawaii throughout Chief of War, which we've talked about before, but now looking back at it, I absolutely loved hearing our language spoken on a platform with a global audience. In speaking with Auntie Kauisai Dudua of Oweaulu and actor Moses Goods, who played Ke'eo Moku, we also know that this was incredibly important to everyone involved in production and something that the cast and crew took great pride in. That dedication showed in the series. I was also enamored with the cast, seeing so many Hawaiian and Polynesian actors portraying a historical Hawaiian drama. It was phenomenal. The narrative proved to be both entertaining and inspiring, encouraging, I believe, deeper exploration of Hawaiian history and culture. That's what we did this season, right? In fact, it inspired our podcast. It didn't bother me that the show was not a completely factual representation of history because it never claimed to be one. If it had claimed to be one, I think I would have had more issues.
Yeah.
But that was not the case. The writers took inspiration from events and historical accounts to pull together a story to entertain and help get a conversation started. And I think that was achieved.
Yeah, I would agree. If this show claimed to be, you know, historically accurate, especially if it was made by non-Hawaiians, this podcast would have been created to pick it apart. But I'm glad we get to celebrate it and talk about how much we like it.
When it comes to areas in which I believe improvements could be made, next topic, I would like to see the Hawaiian language elevated in each subsequent season, meaning the incorporation of higher level of speech and thought for Olelo Hawaii. Now that our actors have gotten their feet wet in the language, let's continue to develop and expand it through a more complex and poetic use. I would have also liked to see more scenic views of Hawaii's landscape, and in particular, our dedication to sophisticated agricultural and aquacultural practices, lo'i and fish ponds. In Chief of War, Kamehameha spoke at length about feeding his community, so I think more of those landscape-type images showcasing a thriving and bountiful ahupua'a with an abundance of food would have been spectacular. Hopefully next season. Finally, I got this one speaking to my dad. Prior to him seeing the season finale, he told me, "I really hope when they show Kamehameha in battle that he is just ferocious. He's been speaking about peace and encouraging it throughout the season. And now that war is going to happen, I want Kamehameha to be an absolute animal on the battlefield. We all grew up with stories of Kamehameha. He's renowned as our greatest conqueror and warrior. And it's time to see him in that role. He preached peace because he is absolutely deadly in war. I want to see him being the eye of the tiger shark." So that's my dad, okay? And when he said this to me, it made me revisit Kamehameha in the final battle. And I'm not sure if it lived up to all of what my dad and maybe others have been hoping for. In hindsight, I agree it would have been great if Kamehameha stole the entire spotlight once he entered the battle. If he shed his diplomatic, thoughtful, gentle demeanor that had been well established throughout the season, and he just went ballistic on the battlefield. For it to be so shocking and unexpected, making us all walk away really saying, wow, it's Kamehameha time, and not even think about Kaiana anymore.
There should have been more Kamehameha in battle. But Moses did say that his first day on set was shooting the season finale, which is the battle on the Black Desert. So maybe because they shot the battle first, the finale first, and then shot the rest of the series afterwards, maybe they couldn't really anticipate how we would all see Kamehameha over the course of the season, and maybe couldn't anticipate that we would want him to balance his peaceful nature with ferocious action on the battlefield. So, you know, even Jason, Pa'a, and Moses have all said in interviews that it's not 100% perfect. So maybe they'll consider featuring more Kamehameha the Warrior if there is a season two. Aside from that, the biggest thing I think they can improve is showing the lighter side or humorous side of characters. Everybody is so serious so much of the time, and I'm cool with it. You know, this is a drama, and I like ratcheting up the tension and seeing how characters respond. But the intentionally funny moments make the characters more human and the overall narrative more interesting. I still can't decide which scene I like better, right? The brothers talking about the hammerheads and their malo after Kaiana returns home, or Kahumanu and Kaiana making fun of British greeting customs. Let's weave more of these moments into future seasons.
Great suggestion.
So one last thing I wanted to bring up. Back in episode 8 of this podcast, Mehana, you shared that the prop or artifact that you would have wanted from that episode is the necklace that Kaiana wears.
Yes.
Although you didn't know what it was, and I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, we weren't sure. We couldn't really figure it out.
Yeah. So we put the word out and asked if anyone knew the answer to please email us, and someone did.
Yes, we got a response. In fact, we got an email from Caroline Esselin, the Chief of War Costume Designer, and she said, "Mahalo Nui Loa for your amazing insight and enthusiasm for Chief of War. The podcast is wonderful. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you again so much. Fingers crossed for season two. I'm the costume designer of the show and just wanted to let you know that Kaiana's necklace is made of pig's teeth. All the best, all my aloha, and 1,000 mahalos, Caroline."
And so I guess it's the incisors from the pig instead of maybe the tusks.
Mm.
So that makes sense to me.
You know, we already kind of thought that it would maybe be pig's teeth or dog's teeth, right? It was way too big to be human's teeth, right? But to have that confirmation, and we know that that aligns really nicely with how different items were used traditionally in Hawaiian society,
right,
makes sense. I want it even more.
For a second, I thought it was bear claw, but...
Russell, let's edit that out. But amazing. Mahalo nui, Caroline. One more thing, though. I did want to have one last discussion point as we look ahead to season two, because we are anticipating it, we're expecting it, we're manifesting it, right? Russell, what is your biggest desire for the storyline, and what is your largest hope for Chief of War, the series?
I've thought a little bit about this, and I think in terms of the storyline, I just hope we get some of these historical characters that were left out of season one that were important at this kind of point in time of history. Moses talked about it in his interview, and you've also brought it up too, right? Keku Haupio and Keopuolani. I'm sure there's plenty of others that I don't remember off the top of my head that should be in this series. So that was one of them. And then the other one is just that, man, I just hope that we figure out a way to revive the film industry here in Hawaii so that we can film more of this series here in our islands. I know that Jason is super grateful to Aotearoa for helping us with season one of this series, and I'm happy we got it, but you can tell what's Aotearoa and what's Hawaii. For me, I definitely can. And I just wished I had seen more of Hawaii. I understand the business side of things, so I think my big hope is just that we figure out our industry here so that we can bring this series home, and every frame that we watch of Chief of War season two will be in Hawaii.
For me, show-wise, my storyline dream actually kind of contradicts something that you said you really liked about the series. Yeah, you appreciated the strong role that our lead female characters played. And while I agree with that, I do believe that we need greater representation of women in leading roles in Chief of War. There's not enough of them. I'm also very worried that Kupuohi may not be returning for season two in light of the season finale. And if that's the case, who will be our heroine? So more wahine, please, and a miraculous healing for Kupuohi as well. My biggest hope for the series is pretty much exactly what you said. I'd love to see majority or even better all of the upcoming seasons to be shot right here in our islands. I read online that Chief of War spent around $37.8 million per episode, totaling $340 million for the season. That's a ton of money. That's incredible. That investment in a Hawaiian story with Hawaiian writers and actors, outstanding. Now that the groundwork has been laid and the interest sparked in the series, if Jason Momoa is able to use his Hollywood flex to bring more of the filming and even pre- and post-production work to Hawaii, imagine how spectacular that would be, creating more jobs, more outlets for our talent designers, artists, actors, set builders, musicians, film editors, you know, PR, everything. We can really think about creating this mini economy right here. I believe that would be an incredible step in elevating the level of giving back and being involved in the community, the host culture, where these stories originated from.
I would definitely like more opportunity to get on set as well. So I have a selfish desire for this.
So if it's more located here on the islands, then there's a better chance Russell will be there. Yes.
Yeah, I even went back to the gym this week so I could start training. So
he's getting Malo ready, guys.
Be ready. I go be ready.
Perfect. Right.
That is it for this episode and this season of Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast. Mehana and I did get the chance to interview actress Te'au Ohinepehinga, who brilliantly portrayed Kupuohi. It was such a good interview that we're releasing it in full as part two of our postseason wrap-up episode. It is available to download right now. I'm Russell Subiono.
I'm Mehana Makainai. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks again to our guest, Te'au Ohinepehinga.
This episode was written by myself and Mehana and produced by me and Savannah Harriman-Pote.
Mahalo to our support team of Liberty Peralta, Sylvia Flores, and Sophia McCullough.
Thank you to HPR's president and CEO, Meredith Artley, who told us if there is a season two and we don't get Jason Momoa as our in-studio guest, we're fired. Okay, she didn't say that, but I saw it in her eyes.
It's also our plug to make Jason feel sorry and maybe come out.
That's right.
Our theme song is Clarity by Kenny Endo from the album Eternal Energy. Learn more about Kenny and his music, as well as his traditional and contemporary Japanese drumming school, Taiko Center of the Pacific, at kennyendo.com.
And that's pretty much a wrap for us. We had a great time making this podcast, sharing more about Hawaiian culture and history, and talking story about Chief of War. Thanks for hanging out with us and listening every week. If you'd like more content like this from Hawaii Public Radio, let us know. Send an email to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Russell Subiono. Aloha and mahalo for listening.
Yes, mahalo nui to everyone involved in bringing Chief of War to life. What an incredible production. And to everyone who supported and contributed to Feathers and Fire, I'm Mehana Makainai. Until next time, pipi holo ka'au.